The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Off a 16 passenger, this a G5. No, this not a Challenger. Big one. I keep some members with me in the fridge. The coat seats, they some kind of.
It is the WIP afternoon. Joe Rhodes and Marcus Hayes in for Mike Spike and Fritz today. We gear up for Labor Day weekend. We also gear up for Phillies Braves game 2 after an electric performance yesterday. It's just followed nonsense in Queens. That's all. We are live from Chickies and Pete's in South Philly. Catch all the Eagles action this season at the official sports bar of the Philadelphia Eagles, Chickies and Pete's. All right. Marcus.
Sir.
How do you feel about the Birds this year? How do you feel? I don't know. I have no read on kind of outside of when we spoke to Elliot. You mentioned that maybe it's a slow start and then they kind of find themselves a bit, which is fair. What's your overall feeling heading into a season after you win the Super Bowl?
I would be very, very conservative with these injuries, especially the hamstring to A.J. Brown and the groin of Devontae Smith. And if that's true, if that's so, I could see them losing 2 out of 4, which, you know, we know isn't the end of the world because they lost 2 of 4 last year and rallied. But especially and with Dickerson with his knee, I mean,
it's crazy. I'm a little shocked that he's where he is now physically.
Well,
but
we
maybe
don't, we don't know where he is. Yeah. We also don't know what's behind him. See, that's the thing. Like, they might think that him at 50% is better than Brett Toth at 150%. So we don't know exactly where he. And as long as they feel he can't exacerbate the injury or impede his rehab, maybe they play him earlier than they'd want to.
And you mentioned this earlier. He is one of those guys. There's a few of them, right? Lane Johnson, Jason Kelsey. They could have 7 body parts not attached to their body, and then they're playing every snap.
And it's been like that for him since he was 19 years old. So he's probably never known a game without pain, Landon Dickerson, that is, because he had so many injuries in college. So, yeah, I'm that said. They're the best team in football. They have a top 10 quarterback. They have the best running back. They should have the best offensive line. They have the best receiving tandem. They have one of the probably 6 to 10 best defensive players in Jalen Carter. They have an elite cornerback, an elite nickel corner. They're a good team. They're a really good team.
Are you buying into the Jordan Davis Peloton, I'm going to sack the quarterback 2025?
No,
Peloton Davis. He shredded all the weight.
Well, good for him.
Pass rush.
4 years late, right?
Well, I mean, that better than Nick Castellanos continuing to swing at the same pitch 5 feet off the plate.
Would have been better if he'd done it before his contract year. You know,
that might have kicked him in the rear end. Were they going to pick up the 5th-year option or not? Well, guess what? Now I'm 60 pounds lighter, whatever the hell it is.
That's the thing. I mean, if you're 50 pounds lighter for your contract, you're going to put it all back on as soon as you sign.
That's a discussion Howie Roseman and Jordan Davis are going to have behind the scenes.
I am never impressed with guys who lose weight to make money. But, you know, good for him. Probably good for his lifetime, too. If this is a habit that keeps up, put 15 extra years on your life. But, no, they're a very, very good team. They're the best team in the NFL, the most talented team in the NFL. They have a spectacular defensive coordinator who understands his personnel, understands himself a little bit better now. So, yeah, they should win the Super Bowl.
Wow, I couldn't agree with you more. I didn't know we could agree on something. And if they don't.
Every week I'm going to be mad.
That's right.
Because I'm entitled.
That is not true. We're not entitled. We're just fans. But you are correct to say we deserve to be angry after every loss. The good thing is, though, Marcus, there's not going to be many of them. You know, maybe 4. Just spitballing off the top of my head. Let's talk to the people. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Joe in California. Hey, Joe.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we got you. What's going on, Joe?
Oh, awesome. Not much, bro. First of all, I just want to say I love your content on YouTube. I watch it every time you put something on. It's always entertaining.
Well, thank you.
And my son gets a kick out of it, even though I have to quickly mute some of the choice words.
I think I speak professionally on YouTube.
Yeah, no, you're awesome, man. And I just wanted to talk about just Phillies and the hitting, and I really appreciate the analysis that Marcus gave about just just some of the just the hitting that we've been watching. And I don't know, it could be me, but I just feel like we're at a stage where it's no longer a Kevin Long problem, that this is now just I'm the $300 million player and I'm going to swing whatever I see at and hopefully I can hit a home run or
Thank you. Kevin Long is a spectacular hitting coach, and if the Phillies were to let him go, he'd be hired before he left the building. These guys that he is coaching are – being the hitting coach of a Major League Baseball team is the worst coaching job in the universe, because every single guy who got to the majors thinks they got there – as a hitter, thinks they got there because they knew best. And convincing them otherwise is almost impossible. Especially when they're streaky. They get hot, they get cold, they get hot, they get cold. Kevin Long is he's like a boutique hitting coach. He's not a one-way guy. He can coach a million different ways, and he's an absolute treasure. Yes, it's disappointing that this team hasn't hit efficiently, especially in the last two playoff runs, but it was not Kevin Long.
Yeah, I agree with that, and it's just something that reminds me of that interview that happened with Ted Williams and Tony Gwynn. I don't know if you guys remember that one where they were just sitting down talking about hitting. And one of the things that Ted Williams said was just like 50% of the game in terms of hitting is between the ears. And from what I see is like these guys are not thinking, even though they want to do that whole C-ball, hit-ball approach. You still got guys like, you know, you mentioned both Nick Castellanos swinging 5 feet off the plate. Like, I know guys can get fooled sometimes, but I really don't think that there's any kind of philosophy or plan when they're at the plate. And that's kind of disheartening, because you want these guys to hit. You want this team to win, and I want this team to win, but it's just, it can get kind of infuriating when you just see good opportunities just kind of just go out the window. And my last question is, why are we still keeping Romano? We know this guy cannot throw, and yet I know he's on IL with the quote-unquote finger injury, but anytime that I see Romano, it's basically like, okay, yep, time to get a beer. I'm done. This game is over.
It's absurd, Joe.
I just don't know why.
Yeah, and Joe, thank you for the call. Buzz, I don't know if this is something that we have, or maybe I'm pretty sure Romano spoke the other day, and he was implying that, hey, when this 15-day IL thing's up, I'm ready to get back. And I'm thinking, okay, we do have that. All right, Buzz, why don't you play it? Here's Jordan Romano on a potential return.
Do you feel like you expect to pitch again this year?
I do, yeah. You know, I just need to figure some things out for sure, right? Obviously, the way I was pitching wasn't great at all, right? So I just need to figure it out and hopefully get back to feeling like my old self.
So I thought originally the 15-day IL is the typical phantom thing. They don't want to embarrass them. They let go Joe Ross maybe, 5 minutes before they announced anything with the IL. But then I heard that, and I go, are they really going to try this again?
You know, honestly,
what's the deal with that?
So I've asked some people in the Phillies organization.
Yeah, what do you got?
And they believe that he has low leverage value. Like, he's an arm that they can trust to put in there in low-leverage situations to either not make it worse or keep it from getting out of hand, which he failed in the Mets series. But in general, and they like him coming in in a mess. Like, if you look at the numbers,
I'm a Tanner Banks guy in a mess.
No,
now.
Absolutely. He's had a better year, but he's not always available, right? And you can't always use Alvarado while he's available. You can't always use Duran. You can't always use Matt Strom. You know, you don't want to burn Matt Strom with two guys on in the sixth inning.
So do you believe personally that he can do it?
If you look at the numbers in those situations,
it says
he's
he
not
can.
Bad.
It says
right?
he can.
But, I mean, the problem is that there's a sense of sort of inevitable failure that I think infects him. And he's a nice guy. So I don't want to root for him because he's a nice guy, but he's a veteran coming off a year of injury. Like, he's damaged goods. He's learning how to pitch again in a different way. He's not the same exact guy. And I don't think that we give them – like, if he were to go back to Toronto and struggle like this, the injury would be brought up all the time because it happened in Toronto. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, 100%.
So if we're talking about Zach Wheeler, because Romano was really good 2 years ago and 3 years ago. If we're talking about Zach Wheeler as, like, you know, if he's really struggling or just inconsistent this time next year – well, he's coming off
injury.
It's the same frame. Now, Toronto didn't want to keep him. He came here. It is what it is. This is his reality. There's no excuse for it. But I think we need to give him a little bit more grace, or we need to have given him a little bit more grace, understanding that he's coming off a year of injury and he's an older guy coming off injury.
I gave him a long leash compared to other fans. I do think that there were people who were right away just saying, you know, failure, this sucked.
Well,
Jeff Hoffman.
Because he was a failure and he sucked, and Jeff Hoffman was doing great.
I know. But I was willing to give him that opportunity to really work himself back into things.
Right.
You know, it's not just going to happen overnight. There's a lot he's got to deal with. But now, when we're talking about the current position, I just don't know how you can bring value. Like, we talk about my frustration with this team, right? If there's a world where it's game three of the NLDS, and it's a... I
don't think he's going to be a playoff roster.
Okay, well, that's my point I'm bringing up is there's no way we can be talking about this guy actually returning to be a part of this thing, right?
But he spoke like there was
a chance.
Well, I mean, it's 6 weeks to the playoffs. So I think he hopes to contribute, but I don't think they will unless he is just lights out when he comes back. And maybe this has been bothering him longer than we know. Maybe that's contributed to his inefficiency. But unless he is lights out for 3 weeks going into the playoffs, I don't think he's part of the playoff roster, especially since you're going to have to take one of your starters out of the rotation anyway, maybe two.
He better not be. That's my point. When I heard that, I started to go, oh, no. I started to panic, wondering if they're going to do something that's going to piss me off, like utilize Jordan Romano.
He could be the reverse Craig Kimbrell. He could start off horrible and be great at the end.
Could
be an all-star in a second.
Oh, man, I'd be such a Jordan Romano guy if that's the case. I'd be loving it. Let's check in on our Twitter poll, which is brought to you by Mark's Jewelers. Experience the Mark Jewelers difference with showrooms in Montgomeryville, PA, and Mount Laurel, New Jersey, or online at marks-jewelers.com. Did Kyle Schwarber's four-home run night move you, or are you too damaged from the Mets series? 52% too damaged, 48% says it moved them. That's a pretty interesting split.
But that's been consistent for the 2-3 hours it's been up. And I think it underscores or maybe reinforces my contention that people have connected with this team.
Especially Kyle.
Right.
I do think people love
Kyle. Right?
Do you think there's a chance they let him go? Or do you think that they know the importance of his presence here? With, to your point, the connection of the fan base, do you feel John Middleton understands the power of Kyle Schwarber staying?
Absolutely. He really does. And he should have understood it before the season began because it's probably going to cost him $15 million a year more than he wanted to pay.
Sell a couple more cigars, you'll be all right. That's all.
I think he sold that company.
I don't even know. I'm just looking for a joke.
So, one of the things that I learned as a sports writer about halfway through my career is that winning is less important when it comes to a superstar. Winning is less important than justifying the contract. Now, winning justifies the contract often. But you justify the contract by putting people in the seats, getting them to eat hot dogs, getting them to buy your jersey, getting to park, you know, that sort of thing. There is no amount of, you could not sign Bryce Harper, you could not pay him enough money to justify. He's already justified his contract, no matter what.
From a business level, I 1,000% agree. No doubt.
I think John Middleton understands that, too. And that's why I think he's going to be willing to pay whatever it takes to keep Kyle Schwarber here, because people will come to see Kyle Schwarber for the next 2 or 3 years, even if he is no longer the Kyle Schwarber that we're seeing in 2025. So to answer your question, yeah, I think Kyle Schwarber is one of those guys that, you know, it'll probably take not a hometown discount, but a hometown increase. He'll probably be able to get more from Middleton than he would be able to get from the Dodgers or the Red Sox or the Yankees, because he knows what value Kyle Schwarber here paired with Bryce Harper is more valuable than Kyle Schwarber probably anywhere else paired with anyone else.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Yeah, I think it would be a smart business decision. And outside of business, I think it's a smart baseball. I mean, this guy, first off, as a DH, I don't think his hitting is just going to diminish overnight.
Well, he's going to
be a big – I know, which is scary.
He's better at 32 than
he was
at 28.
Could it be a big poppy thing where the guy's just doing it no matter what? You know, just the guy just has a power bat, and he can just survive as a power bat.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know?
Well, and he doesn't play defense. So
exactly.
It preserves you. It gives you two or three extra years, and it gives you August and September. Your legs are still there in August.
It is funny, though, when he does mix himself in there in left field. Maybe there's a foul ball, and he's running over to it.
Mm-hmm.
Just a big, jolly softball. I feel I'm watching a local softball league.
You know what you feel like you're watching? You're watching the Little League, like the Little League World Series, where the kid in left field can't play first base because there's another big gangly kid at first base who really can't play left field, and you know, you just hope the kid doesn't hurt himself by the time he gets to the ball.
Yet that guy's going to make $30 million to hit bombs and bombs only. It's amazing. Let's go to Tom in Wilmington. Hey Tom,
how you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Just a quick comment on last night. I was very, very disappointed in the Philadelphia fans after Schwarber hit number four. I don't know what the crowd was. Was it 41,000?
Give or take.
How are not all 41,000 standing on their feet and demanding the next batter steps out, takes the timeout, and demanding a curtain call for a guy that just hit his fourth home run? The applause was done by the time he got to the dugout.
Honestly, I don't think they're allowed to.
Is that Yankee Stadium?
I was going to ask that. I was going to ask if the new rules have anything to do with the timing of the next pitch.
Yeah, the umpire has to be in on it, and he has to, like, sort of stop play because of the pitch clock. And I'm not sure that was going to happen.
I mean, wouldn't a good umpire do that?
Well, I mean, you have to talk to the umpire. I don't even know who was umpiring last night.
Was it CB? I don't know who it was, CB.
To answer your question, you don't see many curtain calls anymore, do you? Like, you used to see curtain calls quite a bit, but you don't see them very much anymore because they get on with it.
I think they did the McCutcheon. Maybe when McCutcheon returned to there was maybe one iconic.
It has to be predetermined. So right. They decided this rule a couple of years ago when they brought in, like, first of all, batters can only take one timeout per at bat. And to the point about the ovation thing, because there's a pitch clock now, the umpire has to, like, basically say to the managers before the game, if there's a highly anticipated return to a specific ballpark, hey, we're going to just not follow the rules in this one particular instance.
I think he got a pretty good cheer after the fifth at bat.
When he walked back to the dugout. That's when he really got it.
I thought he got a pretty good one there, and I thought he had a pitch to do it. Oh, man, I actually had a reaction. I didn't think I'd have one reaction all game long that actually gave me a little reaction. I thought he was going to do it.
I mean, can't the next batter sacrifice his timeout and use it right then and there?
Well, would you be angry if that guy needed that timeout later in the at-bat, and then unfortunately he didn't have it now because he needed
up 18-3, I don't know how much you really need it.
If you've already gotten 15 runs, you're not going to need that timeout. Tom, I do love you.
I really appreciate the call. We're off the rocker now.
No, we are not. We are
Marcus,
not giving up a strike.
Who's crazier, me or the we didn't do a good enough job given the standing
that was,
O?
That's
call.
Pretty. That's well. Again, he didn't have all the information.
That's
you know,
true. That's true.
Him.
That's true.
But no, you do not give up a strike. You do not give up a timeout in your at bat. I don't care if you're Bryce Harper. I don't care if you're Susan Harper. You do not give up a strike or a timeout during an at-bat in a Major League Baseball game, ever. You never know what that stat's going to be. That might be the home run that makes you the extra 5 minutes.
Exactly. I was just going to say, what if you end the year with 19 home runs and you could get 20?
You talk about people complain all the time about hitters in games where they're being blown out or blowing somebody out, like wasting an at-bat. you don't waste an at-bat, you don't wake a strike, you don't waste a second of your major league career.
I actually thought the crowd was pretty good. Maybe I was blinded, or not blinded, but...
they were begrudgingly delighted coming off the Mets series.
The first inning, though, Marcus, you got to agree, wasn't it kind of weird? Now, granted, your pitching was doing terrible, but
it was
a weird energy.
You know
energy.
What it was? I'll tell you.
And I'm a Nola guy, but...
I'll tell you what it was. It was like, oh my God, Nola again. It had nothing to do with the Mets. It had nothing to do with the team. It had everything to do with Aaron Nola blowing up in the first start, being okay in the second start, and then all the scar tissue we've had over the last 10 years where Aaron Nola has the one bad inning or gives up three solo homers or whatever. Aaron Nola just signed a big contract to be here for a long time. That's what it was in the first inning. It was Nola angst.
But after that,
as a veteran of Nola angst, you know what that feels like.
I'm a Nolasman. I'm a huge Nolasman. I'm a fan of Nola, and I know all about the angst, unfortunately. But even as someone who was a fan of him, and I've made some jokes about, hey, I still believe it. Not for this year. I'm more of a looking ahead at the future. Maybe he can bounce back next season, kind of thing. But I don't even look at yesterday's settling down as a positive because of how bad that first inning is. And if I'm projecting Aaron Nola this season down the road, I still feel that inning is going to pop up at any point.
Well,
that's
kind of the – when you're handicapping what they're going to do, mm-hmm. if you have to predict what they're going to do, well, you look at the starting pitching. And before Zach Wheeler was injured, it looked pretty promising. But now – you have so many unknowns.
I was going to ask you that. How would
you line
it up?
Christopher Sanchez is your ace.
Yep.
There's a lot. It's very different pitching as Christopher Sanchez's ace versus Christopher Sanchez, really the third pitcher because Nola's making so much money and has so much credibility. Okay. That's one issue. The other one, obviously, is what is Nola going to be going down the stretch and into the playoffs? Because he'd really have to pitch badly not to be one of your starters in the playoffs, given his track record in the playoffs. What is Jesus Luzardo really? You know?
So this is the way I have it right
and,
now.
And we've seen great Ranger and horrible Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Ranger is probably the guy that I would trust most in the playoffs right now, even over Sanchez, because nothing phases him and he's produced. But what was almost a given 3 weeks ago is now maybe your biggest question mark.
For sure. So right now I have Sanchez, and you're right, there is something to be said about having to be the guy. And as much as I'm very intrigued by Sanchez and his skill set and his growth and his development, because it's miraculous, no doubt about it, there's a reason why Zach Wheeler is special, and guys like Zach Wheeler don't grow on trees. You don't lose those guys, and then someone just automatically pops up. I mean, it's very rare to have that. Maybe you do, but it's a hard thing to fill that void. So I would have Sanchez, Ranger, and then it's a toss-up between how Nola finishes the backstretch and Luzardo. And I don't feel great about either of those options, but that's my 1-2-3 view as we sit here on August 29th, which is scary considering at one point I thought it would be Wheeler, Sanchez, Ranger, Nola. Think about those four.
I really can't see them starting three lefties in the
playoffs. I know.
So that probably means Luzardo's going to the bullpen.
Or if you need a fourth starter at some point.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, is that the point? But you're right, three lefties isn't going to happen.
Yeah, like Syndergaard was the fourth starter for one game.
But what if it's so bad? Because I agree, there's no way they're doing that. But what if Nola is that bad where it's their only reasonable option to go three lefties?
Well, no, absolutely.
Then
as I said, like he would have to pitch very, very poorly consistently down the stretch. Because if he has good, bad, mediocre, mediocre, good, bad, he's probably going to be your third starter in the playoffs.
We're 2.5 hours in, and we're hitting all the points on why I am frustrated and annoyed. Now, some of them are uncontrollable. You can't control the Zach Wheeler thing, and we're obviously sending all the prayers and thoughts to him and his family throughout this time, so that's not a baseball reason to be angry at the Phillies the way we talk about other things. But when we talk through the inefficient offense when guys try to be heroes or do too much and not listen to certain things. And then we talk about the staff now changing. And then, you know, guys like Romano was supposed to be a high-leverage guy. Now we're not even talking about him on the playoff roster. And Kepler was signed to be a starting left fielder. He's in right field as a platoon because your right-handed power bat can't play. And as we go through this, I start getting hit with the realization again of Broads, you know ball. And there's a reason why you're fractured, because these issues are taking you down.
So who's the right-handed power hitter?
I thought it was going to be Nick. But instead, it's JT. And believe it or not, I got to give a lot of credit to JT. I thought his career looked to be on the back nine. And
I actually wrote a column earlier this season saying, even though his offense has dissipated, he's such a good defensive catcher and handles the staff so well, you should probably give him, you know, 2 years and $20 million sooner than later. You know, Casey gets hot and he becomes very marketable again. But, I mean, just lock him in.
What's the alternative, too?
But the premise was, even though his offense has disappeared, but it's reappeared now.
I actually have faith in him in the box, which, but to the lack of power with Nick, the fact that Trey Turner, who just hit his first home run in CBP, is right behind him in homers, I mean, that's got to be so demoralizing if you're Nick. That's what he does, is hit homers and have the power. Yet Trey Turner is sniffing you in home runs?
Well, I don't know what's happened, but I think the 8 years before Nick got here, his OPS was 850, and that justifies $100 million. What do you think his OPS is since he's been here? That's like
710,
on-base plus slug, 735.
Okay, 735.
115 points lower.
That's rough.
And he works hard. He's here every day. He plays every day. I don't know what's happened. I don't know if the pitchers have found a hole in his swing. He can't generate power because of it. But, and, you know, again, he's playing in Cincinnati for one of those years, so he hit a lot of homers in Cincinnati. He should be able to hit a lot of homers here, especially in this lineup. He was hitting cleanup for a while.
Exactly. Think about
Harper and Schwarber were around him at one point. So, yeah, it's a mystifying thing, and it's interesting to see what they're doing, you know, with that position with him right now. It'd be fascinating to see. I think we'll probably get the lineup if we haven't gotten it already. It'd be fascinating to see where, you know, sort of how they use him in the next 6 weeks.
I'll give Rob Thompson a lot of credit here. And I'm a Rob Thompson fan. I think he does a good job. I don't know many that would be able to deal with Nick's personality. Is he in the lineup? Oh, he is in the lineup.
He is in the lineup.
All right, we'll give you the lineup coming up next.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
215-592-9494. It's Broads and Marcus Hayes in for the afternoon show, live from Chickies and Pete's in South Philly. Catch all the Eagles action this season at the official sports bar of the Philadelphia Eagles, Chickies and Pete's. If you do want to climb in, 215-592-9494. Are you emotionally damaged from the Mets series? Or can you move on and appreciate things like last night where Kyle Schwarber had four homers? That's the question. It's Broads, it's Marcus Hayes, it's 94. It's the WIP Afternoon Show. No Ike, Spike, and Fritz today. Broads and Marcus Hayes with you. We are live from Chickies and Pete's in South Philly. There is still time to book your fantasy football party at Chickies and Pete's. Find a location near you at chickiesandpete's.com. Marcus, it looks a lot different now than it did when we first got here. People are starting to flood. We got beers going. We got food going. We got Phillies baseball. People in the jerseys. It's popping here.
Hey, man, I'm just telling you. People are in love with the Phillies, unlike yourself.
Hey, I do love them.
These are positive people.
Well, I don't know about
that. They are not
that.
Broken,
I saw a few people say, Broads, you're a genius. And I said, thank you. Enjoy your food.
Well, those ones have been figments of your imagination. No. I'm sitting right next to you. I didn't see those
Well,
people.
You went to the bathroom.
I did.
You missed.
I wasn't in there that
long. No, you were in there pretty long. You were in there pretty long. where are we? I don't know. That joke threw me off. 215-592-9494. How do you feel about the Phillies? Because I am, unfortunately, Marcus was correct. I am emotionally broken, and there's just something wrong with me. I don't know what to tell you. I watch my baseball team lose, and then I don't know how to operate for a couple of days. Even if my team gets Kyle Schwarber rocking four home runs in a night, there's just so much to do to win me back. And I will admit, I am a flawed person. But it seems right now it's about 50-50 split with our callers and on our Twitter poll as well. And we would love to hear from you at 215-592-9494. Before we get to the lineup, I want you guys to take a listen to this audio. This was Rob Thompson before yesterday's game, talking about, you know, just the approach of the guys and them wanting to win and the way they go after it. Here's Rob Thompson.
Bryce mentioned a sense of urgency yesterday. Like, how do you keep, when you're a team that's been to the playoffs a few years in a row, you have a lot of veteran guys, you're in playoff position now, how do you keep that urgency through the final few weeks of the regular season?
Well, I don't know if you have to keep it, really. I mean, these guys want to win, and they want to perform, and they want to win a world championship. That's what they play for. And a lot of these guys, they haven't done that yet. You know, even though they've been paid a great deal of money, they haven't won. So that's on their mind, and they want to get it done.
So the urgency is there. They want to get this thing done. They are wired to do it. Then why'd you lay an egg against the Mets? Why did it have to look that way?
Well, you know, I will say, you know, I've been doing this job for a long time. And, again, one of the reasons I like going to this clubhouse is because there's a real sense of accountability and responsibility when they fail. Like, the last two seasons, actually the last three seasons, Bryce Harper will have his, you know, end of season press conference. He'll dress and he'll talk about it reflectively, knowing that that's, you know, the last loss. You know, so after, you know, the loss in Houston, loss in the loss at home against Arizona, and the loss in New York. And each time he was really angry. Like, he was so angry he didn't talk to his teammates. Like, he just did not. He said goodbye. But the other guys are sort of palling around, sitting in their, you know, uniforms, taking their time, whatever. Bryce Harper got dressed, made himself presentable, talked to the press until it was over, you know, impromptu, didn't go to the podium. He just, okay, I'm a locker, or wherever you need me to be, I'll be. He answered every question, turned on his heel and left. And that's, you know, if people want to understand what Rob's talking about, that's what he's talking about. This is the highest paid player in the history of the team who's genuinely angry that they lost, how they lost, and how he performed, which is remarkable because only Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig have been statistically as productive in the playoffs in history.
His playoff numbers
more
are
than
out of this
Bryce
world.
Harper. So, and he's but he's upset with himself. He's not upset just that other guys didn't produce. He's not upset that they lost. He's upset that he didn't do every single thing he could do. And, you know, I believe a lot of what Bryce does is for effect. I believe he panders to the town. He panders to fans. He panders to kids, which is wonderful, you know, with the fanatic stuff and the, you know, the themes and the headband.
He missed the mark on the rivalry pack.
It's all right, you know.
He took a big swing and a miss on the rivalry pack.
Nobody's perfect. You know, he's got a shoe company to appease as well, right? You know, what are we talking about?
The rivalry pack.
Exactly. But that said, he's one of the few guys, and there are plenty of guys in this town right now who are playing for a paycheck and not a trophy. Okay? So he really does care when they play badly and when they lose, and he's accountable for it. Not just lip service, but he puts himself out there and he's accountable for it. And he takes that off Schwarber, and he takes that off Wheeler, and he took it off of Rhys Hoskins when Rhys was here. He's the guy that's accountable for it. And this is not like look at how great Bryce Harper is as a human being. This is really what Rob Thompson's talking about. The best player of this generation, best hitter of this generation as a Philly, the highest paid player in team history, does want to win.
The urgency's there. No, I don't think that Rob Thompson is wrong, if that's his assessment, and you're probably close to the mark there on that. But we need to somehow find a way for it all to marry and blend together with the other.
And you know who else wanted to win? Derek Jeter and A-Rod. And guess where Rob Thompson was before here?
The Yankees.
He was with Derek Jeter and A-Rod. So that's the kind of, you know, they didn't win as much as they should have. You know? They didn't win as much as they should have, but they wanted to win, and he understands. Rob Thompson, that's one of the reasons Rob Thompson is such a good fit here. As tough as it is to be the Phillies manager when the Phillies are talented and failing, it's much, much tougher to be a Yankee when your team is overpaid and underperformed.
It's funny you bring up the Yankees thing, though, and maybe how much they should have won, and we can relate it to 08 because we thought after that there probably should have been more championships, especially with the talent of the starting rotation.
And there
right?
would have been, except for the Yankees.
I know. So someone brought this up to me a few weeks back, where everyone brings up the fact that it's a World Series appearance, and it's an NLCS, and it's an NLDS, and it's following the similar trend that happened. But the difference in last run, in 08 and all, you won the championship, and then you started to fall and go in the wrong direction. How much does the viewing experience, maybe not the viewing experience, how much does the takeaway change if they go backwards, starting with the World Series loss, NLCS loss, NLDS loss, but it ends up with the championship last? Does that get viewed differently? Oh, they should have got more?
You mean the previous generation?
Yeah, like the previous generation we look at is they should have had more. But with this group, if they do squeeze one out at the end and they went backwards and then won and finished with the championship, do we feel differently about the core and these years as Phillies baseball? Does that make sense,
the way I'm explaining it? It does. Okay. I understand what your question is, but I don't think it really matters whether you win in an era, whether win it all at the beginning. And they didn't win it all at the beginning. They won. They went to the playoffs and lost.
And lost first.
Then won the World Series. So yeah. They were kind of expected to be pretty good. Not that good, but they were kind of expected
to be
pretty good.
And the way it happened in 07 was pretty out of this world, too.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
But this Phillies team, you know, they kind of snuck in the first year. They were a wild card team the first 2 years. So, you know, they're building regular season collateral and losing postseason equity, right? Which is crazy. But my point is, if they're 10 years from now, and we're, 15 years removed from 2008, 13 years removed.
Give or take, not math, guys.
Right. Let's see, 17 years removed, right, from 2008. We look at that era as a golden era. And, it's too bad they didn't get back, even though they got better in the regular season and worse in the playoffs. We look at that as a golden era. That's the golden era of the Phillies. It really is.
Yeah, it is.
So there is no – and I believe if they go to the playoffs 4 years in a row or 5 years in a row or four out of 5 years, say they don't make it this year or something and they go back next year and win a World Series, this will be another golden era. And all the stuff, all the minutiae that we're talking about now
– quiets out.
You know, quiets out. I believe people will always remember the two losses against Arizona, but I don't think they're going to remember what happened against the Mets last year the way they feel about Arizona. Because in Arizona, you were two wins away from going to back-to-back World Series and being favored in the World Series.
I agree with you. Now, here's this positive spin. You ready for this? I got a positive spin. No, you are. You are ready for this. Here's the one thing that can convince me there's a chance that the team rides a high and gets it done. You just mentioned it. In 22, they snuck in and it just happened. In 23, they didn't win the division. I remember not enjoying them throughout a lot of the regular season. I just remember I couldn't stand them. I hated the way they played, this and that. And then Xfinity Live in October, the boys are there drinking cold ones and celebrating with the fans. And then we enjoyed a really awesome couple of weeks, right? Are we lined up for another one of those where I lose my mind six times after a series like what just went down with Queens and all that? And then the playoffs start, and they just know how to do it again like they did in 22.
So Garrett Stubbs isn't in the clubhouse this year. I don't know that that's a seismic shift in, I don't know, aura? Is that what the kids call it?
That's right. That's a good pull by you.
So
you have three daughters.
They don't talk kid when we're around.
Okay.
Like, they talk, you know, you're listening to the ABC Nightly News or something. They are not cool around us. So I will say this. It's been a different vibe after wins. It's been a different vibe in spring training. It's been a different vibe the whole year. I don't know if it has anything to do with Stubbs. I think it has more to do with 2 years of disappointment. and a real urgency. You know, it's not only a contract year for Schwarber, it's a contract year for JT. Those are the two biggest personalities in the clubhouse. You know, JT care deals with the catchers and pitchers. Schwarber deals with like the position players, and Bryce Harper's a star.
What about Ranger? Does he have any personality? Because people talk about him like he is, but maybe not.
He's
to
relevant.
Level. He's right. Relevant. Okay, right. That's
relevant.
Fair to put
yes.
it. Yeah,
but he's also kind of goofy, you know.
Yeah.
He's not irrelevant, but he's not a guy you're going to look to like set the thermostat. Right?
Okay.
So that said, you've got this sort of like seriousness. And this tangent I'm going off is off your tangent, talking about celebrating Xfinity Live and the crazy celebrations they've had postseason every time they made the playoffs, won a series, yada, yada, yada. I don't know that that happens this year. I don't know that anybody's going to be partying at Xfinity Live when they clinch or when they win the wild card series, if that's their, you know, if they don't get the
all
bye,
business,
right?
all business. Okay,
it'll be
cool
interesting to see if that is sort of how and whether or not that makes a difference. Because I would contend that the sort of looseness in the clubhouse over the last 3 years has been a benefit to them.
1,000%. I agree with you. I actually think that's why they play tight.
Or has it?
I don't know, it
was there, and they failed.
Yeah, but I don't think they do well when tight. Because I think what happens when tight, you lose 13-3 in Game 1 against the Mets. You don't want me to relive Game 2 and Game 3.
Right, but they've been tight, and they got a 5-game lead.
Well, they better watch, because the Mets come to town for 4. You might slip away to 1.
Oh, four with the Mets and 3 with the Brewers over the next, 4 weeks?
That's big for my sports health.
There you go.
Very big for my sports health. Let's go to Sam in Delaware. What's going on, Sam?
How's it going, y'all? I just had something real quick I wanted to say, which is I'm concerned that it's mental with these guys because the talent is there. We see it. We saw it last night. They blew us out of the water. But then you got series like in New York, and, you know, it's just they're freezing up. We know that they're capable, but I really think it's mental. We see them swinging at stuff that when they're on, they're not swinging at those types of balls. There's no mental buy-in from what I'm seeing in games like what we saw them in New York.
You agree with Brody then?
Well, I was just going to say, is that just against the Mets, or do you mean overall they're not mentally?
I think just in general, like when they're not performing, it's not because they can't. It's because there's some type of mental block happening with half of the lineup where they're playing out. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know why it is, but I really think that it comes down to mental. It's nothing to do with what anybody's capable of, for sure. We know that much.
What do you think the fix is? Do you think it's just something they have to deal with or get over? Is there a solution?
I don't know. I think in some ways, for some of them is ego. I love Bryce Harper, but I don't think he can stand when someone else in the lineup is doing better than he is. To be honest, I think. I mean, it is.
Bryce
it
catching
is.
Strays.
Like, I know.
We went from MP3 to people chanting MVP for Schwarber going up to bat. You know, that's got to hurt a guy with a big ego. I love the guy. But
Sam, that's a take.
I don't know. I think that a lot of ways it's mental and that they need to find a way to get over it. I don't know if it's they don't feel the joy sometimes. I don't know what it is because the joy is there when they're at home, right? Because they got the fans behind them. I don't know if they're not having fun. I don't know if they just aren't focused. I don't know what it is, but I think it's mental. I don't think there's any point in debating the level of talent because we know that they can hit the ball. They can do what they got to do. Because, I mean, look at the turnaround from, you know, New York to they come home, and it's like there's no competition with Milwaukee. So, I don't know. I think they got to get their heads on straight if we want to them go deep into October. That's all
right.
I got.
Sam, thank you. How about that?
She started out with a little 22, and then she turned around and hit you with a bazooka.
Here's a plot twist. The rivalry pack wasn't about the Mets. It was about Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah.
This guy's going toe-to-toe with Schwarbs and needs to do better. I appreciate Sam's passion. I think she's onto something about the mental stuff. But I do think Bryce is probably okay with Kyle Schwarber having a season like this because it puts them closer to the ultimate goal.
Well, not only that.
I do find the take interesting.
Bryce is a different guy than he was a few years ago because things have transpired. He's won an MVP. and Rhys Hoskins is gone. Now, when Bryce came here, Rhys Hoskins was the best player on the team, and Bryce loved that. So that, to me, is evidence that he wants to be surrounded by other great players. He doesn't need to be the greatest player on the team. But, you know, maybe there's something in Bryce that Bryce isn't aware of. Bryce has never given me any inkling that he's anything but desperate to have the best players on his team he can have. And the thing that refutes Sam's argument is that Trey Turner, Kyle Schwarber, and Nick Castellanos are on, and JT Realmuto are on this team because Bryce insisted that they come.
Yep.
And Trey, you know, we had MVP talk when Trey got signed, you know. And, you know, JT, best catcher in baseball. These are guys that are going to take shine from Bryce if Bryce doesn't do well. And, you know, in Bryce's defense, and I tease Bryce in print and sometimes in person about being the de facto GM, without these guys, not only are they not where they are, they don't maintain relevance when Bryce is hurt. And Bryce has been hurt a lot.
That's a good point. No, you're right, though, because I was literally reading your mind. I was about to say, ooh, a lot of these guys are – that's scary. That's scary, us being on the same wavelength. But when Bryce is the reason why a lot of these guys are here,
right.
I think he's okay with these guys. But I will say I do appreciate the curveball.
That's a curveball. You know, it's funny, too, because the best part about it was she was like, I'm tiptoeing into the water – and then I'm going to dive in from 80 feet high.
She needed to do the feel-out process. Get the toes wet, then you start the ankles wet, you know, going in the ocean. So here's the line, all right? The lineup is with Elder is on the bump for the Braves. So they've got a right-hander. You got Trey Turner, Kyle Schwarber, Harper. Batting cleanup, Alec Boehm. Batting fifth, Marsh. Castellanos sixth. Kepler's in the lineup as well. So Marsh, Casty, and Kepler on the lineup. JT is not. So Marshawn is behind the dish. And Bryson Stott bats eighth. So I just find it interesting. No Bader today. You got a righty on the bump for the Braves. And Boehm batting cleanup. We'll see what that means. 215-592-9494. That is the phone number. Coming up next, we do have the greatest segment in radio history, Top 5 at 5. Can't wait to see what Buzz has for us. We are live from Chickies and Pete's in South Philly. Catch all the Eagles action this season at the official sports bar of the Philadelphia Eagles, Chickies and Pete's. It's Broads, it's Marcus Hayes in for the afternoon show on 94WIP.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.